Will your career path allow you to retire someday? If you have doubts, you'll want to stay tuned for some good news. Hi, I'm Rob West. When it comes to being able to retire someday, what's more important, how much you make or how much you save? Ron Blue joins us today with a story that should inspire you if you worry that you don't make enough to retire. Then it's on to your calls at 800-525-7000. That's 800-525-7000. This is Faith and Finance Live, biblical wisdom for your financial decisions. Well, my guest today is Ron Blue, financial teacher and author and co-founder of Kingdom Advisors. Ron, great to have you back with us.
As always, Rob, I look forward to it. I appreciate being asked.
We're always delighted to have you. And Ron, you know this quote from Albert Einstein. He said, compounding is the eighth wonder of the world. And he said, and I quote, he who understands it earns it. He who doesn't pays it. And I know you have a story for us about a couple who apparently understood this very well. And I'm not surprised. Tell us about it.
Well, several years ago now, my 30-something-year-old son, he was a teacher at a private school. He'd been married for a bit, and his wife was a teacher also, and they had yet had children. But his question was, he said, Dad, he said, you know, Ann and I are just teachers, and we're just never going to have enough probably to ever retire.
Yeah.
And in the school where he was working at that time didn't have a pension program either. So That was his question, and it was a relevant, important question.
Yeah, and that certainly could be true, but it doesn't have to be. As we said, what you earn is important, but not the most important part of the equation, is it?
No, for sure. And I began to ask him a few questions, and I said, tell me a little bit about your financial situation. And what he told me was exactly what I would want to hear. One was he never, ever used credit cards for debt. He used credit cards to buy things, but they paid it all off. They didn't have any car loans. They had a home mortgage, and they had a savings account. And frankly, they had about $30,000 in their savings account.
Wow.
I can't remember when I had $30,000 in a savings account. The fact that they had a savings account was, I think, really significant because it meant that they were living within their income. Yeah. And they weren't spending it, so they were saving as opposed to spending. And what Albert Einstein had to say was very relevant to them because they were saving and they were benefiting from the compounding interest.
Yeah.
So I was and we could have stopped right there. I was pretty pleased with what I was hearing, the fact that they were at that stage of life with no debt and a savings account. Pretty unusual, quite frankly.
I can imagine. And I'm not surprised, Ron. The acorn didn't fall far from the tree, I guess. But give us some of the nuts and bolts as you unpack this. How did they do it?
Well, they just set aside, I think it was about $2,000 a month, which was Ann's salary, I believe. Part of Ann's salary wasn't 100%. But they were saving about $2,000 a month, not spending. In other words, they had chosen to live in a smaller home than what perhaps they could have afforded or the banker said they could afford. But I did know that if they were saving that kind of money, that at 30-something, give them 35 years till you're 65, and I knew without even calculating it, that they would probably have $1 million or more in their retirement account.
Yes.
So they had the magic of compounding working for them rather than against them.
Yeah. That's powerful, and we know that works when you can be consistent in that. Well, Ron, we're about out of time. Tie a bow on this for us. What is the big takeaway here for our audience today?
Well, the big takeaway is basically to live within your income, avoid the use of debt, and set aside money on a regular basis and give yourself time, and time will be working for you as opposed to against you. And the earlier you start, the better.
Mm.
So that's pretty simple advice. Live within your income and don't use debt and save.
And do it for a long period of time. Well, that is great advice, Ron. It's something you've been saying for years, and I appreciate you sharing it in light of this great story. Thanks for stopping by, my friend.
Thank you for asking. Appreciate it.
Live within your income, avoid the use of debt, and save. Do it for a long time. That's Ron Blue's advice today, and it's good advice. We'll be back with your questions just after this. 800-525-7000. That's 800-525-7000. I'm Rob West, and this is Faith and Finance Live. We'll be right back.
The opinions offered during this program represent the personal or professional opinions of the participants, given for informational purposes only. Any information provided is not intended to replace advice from a financial, medical, legal, or other professional who understands your specific situation.
Great to have you with us today on Faith and Finance Live. I'm Rob West. It's time to take your calls and questions today on anything financial. The number to call is 800-525-7000. That number again is 800-525-7000. We'd love to help you wrestle with whatever you're thinking about in your financial life today, help you apply biblical wisdom, understanding that everything we do here comes from a biblical worldview, which starts with the idea that God owns everything. Therefore, we are managers or stewards of God's resources. Money is a good creation from the Lord. It's given to us and trusted to us by the Lord to provide for ourselves and our family, to enjoy. Yes, that's part of God's plan, and to give generously. And when we keep it in its proper context, it can be a blessing. We can be faithful stewards of those resources so long as we don't allow the pursuit of money to compete with God for first position in our lives. You know, we were created with a longing for abundance, for life that can only be found in God Himself, and yet we will often be distracted, perhaps deceived into thinking that the things of this world will satisfy. We know they will not. And so when money has its proper place, well, everything then lines up the way God intended it to. It doesn't mean we'll be without difficulty. This is a fallen world. We'll certainly have our challenges, but handling money God's way is obviously the best way to do it. And when you stand to give an account, our goal and aim here is that you'll hear, "Well done, good and faithful servant." So with whatever you're thinking about in your financial life, give us a call, 800-525-7000. Let's dive in today with our first caller, Nana's in Chicago. Go ahead.
Hey, Rob, how you doing?
I'm very well.
Thanks for picking my call.
Absolutely.
So my question is, my parents are about to retire, and we are thinking about updating our basement into like a one bedroom, like in-law suite for them to live there. Wanted to know, is that like a good investment? Are there any financial pitfalls that maybe I may not be thinking about? So just wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Yeah. Well, I love this. And so this the goal here is for your parents to be able to use it for as long as they need to. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. Well, I love every part of this because, number one, I think you're certainly following the admonition of Scripture that we're to honor our father and mother, and especially in this season of life, what a wonderful picture of you investing in them and bringing them in to live with you, which I'm sure will be a blessing for them. In terms of the economic benefit, I mean, clearly you are finishing a basement, making it into a living space that will undoubtedly add value to your home. If you give thought to making it an in-law suite with a full bathroom and perhaps even some kitchen facilities, and if it had a separate entrance, you could even rent it out someday. You would just have to check with your local zoning office to make sure that's allowed, but that could be an additional benefit. But regardless, it will add value to the home that you could recoup upon the sale. The only issue would just be making sure that, number one, you know, this kind of renovation to your home or addition is a major project. And so you're just going to want to make sure you work with a reputable general contractor, that you have a very detailed not to exceed bid, that you know, you understand the full cost going into it, that you understand kind of how the overages can work if there are any additional costs that are unforeseen. You know, I mean, so you're just going to need to go in with your eyes wide open in terms of embarking on this kind of project. And then I think secondly is, do you have the financial means to take it on? And are you going to be pulling this out of savings, or are you going to be borrowing and then just counting the cost of that? But at face value, I love the idea. I think really the next step is just to say, can we afford this? Give me your thoughts on that.
Okay, so what we are thinking is going to borrow from my 401k. I check with my work, and it's going to be like a 4.5% to pay it back to myself. So that is what we're thinking of doing for that. So is that, does that sound feasible, or is that?
It's certainly feasible, but it's not my preferred option. I mean, I realize that the nice thing is you're paying that interest to yourself. The downsides are, number one, you know, the reason that money is in there is so that it can continue to grow and compound for the future. And so you have something to fall back on to supplement Social Security and be able to cover whatever lifestyle God has called you to and whatever that season of retirement looks like for you. And the extent to which that money's not in there, it's not working, growing, compounding for the future. Secondly, you're going to, you know, repay it with after-tax dollars. So you will get paid, you will pay tax, and then you will put it back in with interest. That's not ideal. And then thirdly, if you were to separate from your employer for any reason, that would become a taxable event, which may or may not involve a penalty, depending upon your age. But it certainly would involve it all being added to your taxable income. And I realize you may not see that coming, but, you know, in either case, you know, it's a possibility. So I guess that would be a last resort for me. Are there other options you've considered? So let me back up for a second. What do you think this project will cost? And have you gotten a contractor in there to give you a realistic bid?
Yes, so the basement itself is already finished. So now what we basically need to do is to partition it and make one side like a bedroom and one side a living space, and then like break off one of the walls and make that into a kitchen. And there's already like a half bath, and maybe add like a full bath to it. The contractor came giving us an estimate about $25,000 to $30,000, because it's already like a finished basement and just the stuff that needs to be added. And what the other option we're thinking of is getting like a home equity loan, like taking a loan from the home equity. But we weren't sure how that really goes. So those were the two options, either the 401k loan or the home equity loan.
Okay. Yeah. And so $25,000 to $30,000 is what's being quoted for you. And have you looked at, you know, what that would do in terms of a monthly payment if you were to get that home equity loan?
So we haven't looked into that at all, because we were first thinking maybe to go into the 401k instead of the home equity. So that's something we can definitely look into.
Yeah. Okay. Very good. Yeah, I would, you know, probably look at that as a better option personally. You know, you're going to want to get multiple contractors in there. You're going to want to get them to provide a written bid for your project with a detailed cost breakdown with the labors and materials and permits and additional expenses. You're going to want a timeline for that. And then you'll also want to ask about warranties and guarantees and really nail that down. And then I think that would be the better option, to get that home equity loan, so long as you could fit that into your budget, still have a little margin left over. But I prefer that over the 401k loan for the reason that I mentioned. But I love your heart here, Nana. I'm thrilled to hear you're going to serve your parents in this way. And we appreciate you checking with us today. If we can help you further, give us a call. This is Faith and Finance Live. A quick break and back with much more right after this. Stay with us. So thankful to have you with us today on Faith and Finance Live. I'm Rob West, your host. Hey, are you struggling to stay on budget with inflation sky high? And by the way, it continues. The Fed is saying that inflation is proving to be stickier than they intended. They're not seeing rates coming down anytime soon until they have more evidence that inflation is easing. One of the Fed governors said he sees it being very difficult to get inflation down to the Fed's goal, and that could continue to push out our rate decreases, which obviously the longer that goes on, the more that's going to create it, a more difficult situation to avoid a recession here economically in the U.S. So a lot to keep our eyes on. In the meantime, things just cost more. I don't have to tell you that. You're experiencing it every day. Having a budget, a plan, not only a plan on paper in a drawer, but a plan that you can actually use and make course corrections throughout the month is really essential to you having some margin, something left over at the end of the month, which is the only way you can fund your goals, paying down debt, saving for the future, being able to give generously beyond maybe a systematic tithe. All of those things require that you have margin at the end of the month. The only way you can do that is with a spending plan. And that's why Julie and I use the FaithFi app. You know, we are in there every day. We're looking at our envelopes. We're seeing what still has money left, where we need to make some course corrections. For my one daughter who does enjoy new clothes from time to time, we can tell her exactly where she stands with her clothing envelope. It's really helpful, actually. Check it out today. You'll find it on our website, FaithFi. Just click app. That's faithfi.com. Just click app and you can download it today. All right, let's head back to the phones. By the way, we're going to take some emailed questions a little later in the broadcast. We get those every week. And on Wednesdays, we try to get through at least three of them just so we can give you some answers to the questions that are most pressing for you. Let's take one of those questions by phone right now to Merrillville, Indiana. Hi, John. Go ahead, sir.
Good afternoon, sir. We have questions on the QLAC, the Qualified Longevity Annuity Contract.
Yeah.
We're looking at putting money into that. I'm 80. My wife will be 71 this year, so we're not. She's not taking the RMDs yet. But we're trying to put into that that account and what the pros and cons are doing something like that.
Yeah, John, what is your primary objective? Is it to avoid that required minimum distribution, or are you looking for the guaranteed return, or all the above?
Yes. number one is we've been trying to reduce the amount that will be subject to RMD. We started doing the qualified charitable deductions this year.
Good.
That was about $15,000 to lower that. And then we know that she has to draw it out by age 85, start drawing it out, which is taxable.
Right.
And that, in 10 years, I'll be 90. So I might be around. I may not be around. If I'm gone, then that's going to be a drop of $30,000 to $40,000 a year in income. So this was to reduce the RMDs, but also then at when I'm 90 to have that extra income.
Sure. Yeah. And you're using it for the purpose in which it was intended. You know, the Q, the qualified portion of this means it's met the requirements for retirement account funds. So in your case, a 401k or an IRA, you can put in up to 200,000 of these funds without it counting as a taxable withdrawal. And then you'd only start paying taxes when the annuity begins. And as you said, that L for longevity alludes to the chief purpose, which is making sure you don't outlive your money and putting off payments until as late as when you turn 85. And then the annuity portion of it, or AC for annuity contract, means you can get a guaranteed stream of income and get regular payments based on the amount you've deposited and the percentage growth they guarantee, and then, of course, the date you want to start receiving it. Now, so I think, you know, if that's what you're trying to accomplish, certainly, you know, that can do exactly what you're looking for. I think part of what you need to evaluate is you've already kind of nailed down your income start date. You'd want to look at your payout options. You'd want to look at fees and surrender penalties and whether you want inflation protection. But also the death benefits are going to be important just so you understand what happens, you know, when you pass away, so that you, you know, can have a beneficiary, contingent beneficiary named. In this case, it would, you know, the survivor payout would typically go to your spouse after your death. And then some annuities actually feature other benefits that would return any unused premiums to your beneficiaries through a lump sum or a series of payments. But you're going to want to make sure if, you know, your wife's depending on your annuity after your passing, you need to make sure that any QLAC that you would choose has that feature. Otherwise, survivors would get nothing, and that defeats the purpose. So I think, you know, given all of that, if you're looking for the guarantees and you want to push it out down the road as much as possible, this is an example of where an annuity, and a very specific annuity in your case, can make a lot of sense.
Yeah. We're doing okay income-wise. The house is paid off. The cars are paid off. And they've got another 5 years on them as well. And we do have the budget working. So,
good.
And we're not taking from the IRA otherwise. So we thought this wouldn't be a way to just put something down the road.
I like it, John. And I like that you're looking for ways to give wisely along the way as well. What an incredible opportunity you have to take all this wisdom and experience God has given you and to use that in service to Him and to give generously and enjoy a season of rest and renewal and hopefully meaningful contribution to in service to the Lord and in the lives of others. So we appreciate you checking with us, sir. If we can help you further in any way, don't hesitate to call back. We're going to take some more questions just around the corner. Looks like nearly all the lines are full. We'll certainly get to as many questions as we can. And as I mentioned as well, we'll be taking some emails a little later. By the way, if you'd like to send us an electronic question, feel free to do that at moodyradio.org/finance. Let me also mention, we'd love to hear from you with your financial support for the ministry as a listener-supported ministry. We absolutely rely on your gifts, whether you're a monthly partner or you make a one-time gift. If you've found some benefit here, maybe you're encouraged each day by the broadcast, you'd like to be one of our supporters, we would certainly appreciate it. Just head to faithfi.com and click give. That's faithfi.com and click give. You can give online, over the phone, or through the mail. We'll be right back. Thankful to have you with us today on Faith and Finance Live. I'm Rob West. Hey, do you have a small group? Are you regularly looking for a biblical study to go through, something that is relevant to your life that'll take you deep into the scriptures? Well, our brand new study here at FaithFi called Rich Toward God is a 4-week study on the parable of the rich fool. I was just in West Palm Beach yesterday. I had a chance to teach through the study, and it was just so much fun to really talk about how money can compete with our hearts and how this really profound parable from Jesus right at the end of his earthly ministry as he's heading into Jerusalem for the last time and he's approached to settle an inheritance dispute. He flips the script and really deals with the heart issue and talks about what true abundance is, and through this parable of the rich fool challenges some of our thinking around where we find fulfillment and how we can allow the things of this world to compete with our devotion for God. And then he finishes with this really profound idea of being rich toward God and explores what that means. If you'd like to check it out, again, it's a 4-week study, beautifully designed, and you can order your copies today at faithfi.com. Just click shop and check it out. All right, let's head back to the phones. We've got a bunch of questions coming up. We will try to get through as many as we can. We're going to go to Orlando next. Hi, Ann. Go right ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question that relates to my mom passed away this past August, and I inherited the house. It's valued at probably right now $373,000. I do have a small equity loan on it, taking care of Mom while she was alive. My question is, what is my best option? Is renting the house or selling the house? I really don't want to be a landlord at 77 years old.
Sure.
So I was just wondering if you could give me some advice.
Yeah. Well, I'd be happy to, Ann. I mean, I like both options because I like real estate as an investment a lot. But you're right. I mean, that was going to be my first question is, do you want to be a landlord? And you're saying the answer to that is no. Now, does that automatically disqualify you? No, you could hire a property management company to take care of the property for you. And that would add some expense, but it would deal with the headaches of, you know, now the renter's calling them in the middle of the night. And, you know, they're the ones maintaining it. And when they move out and it needs repairs before the next tenant comes in, they're going to take care of that. And so that can take a lot of that stress off. Where is the property located?
It's in Gotha, right out of Ocoee. Right here, okay. In our land area.
Okay, yeah. So, I mean, you're obviously very familiar with what's going on with, you know, homeowners insurance there in the state of Florida.
This is
not without its cost. Now, they're not making any more Florida real estate either, and so it's a very desirable place to live. But I guess I would say if you feel like you'd like to just, you know, take the proceeds, split it among any other heirs, and invest it in a more passive investment, that wouldn't be a bad idea. But again, as a part of a diversified investment strategy, if owning a piece of real estate is a way for you to diversify, again, despite the costs and the homeowners insurance and so forth, Florida real estate has done well, will probably continue to do well. As long as you get the right people in there to help you maintain it and take care of it, then, you know, I could go either way. I think it ultimately comes down to, number one, kind of what are your goals during this season of life? And even if you had a rental company, property management company, does that add more complexity that you're not looking for? And then number two, financially speaking, how does this fit into the other investable assets that you have? And does it make sense in light of your overall financial plan, and perhaps having an advisor help you to evaluate that. But apart from that, you know, I don't think there's a right or wrong decision here if you don't need the money, because this is an investment just like, you know, a stock and bond investment. They're just different in terms of how hands-on they are and their long-term performance. Does that make sense?
Yes. I understand hiring somebody to take that, but I just did some work on mom's house, you know, getting it back up to standard shape, you know, to make it look better. So my concern is I didn't want to have to constantly maintain the house and you know, have somebody come in and destroy it or whatever, you know. That was one of my concerns.
I hear you on that. Well, I'm kind of hearing in your voice, Ann, that it would just kind of take a load off you to know that this has been sold. And, you know, with real estate prices being what they are, we're not in a recession. We could be later this year or next year. Does that mean we're in a bubble with the housing market? No, I don't think you'd see any kind of major declines, but clearly we're at a very, you know, high end with real estate, especially in Florida. So this might be a great time for you just to go ahead and sell it, see this as a wonderful gift from your mom as the steward and ultimately from the Lord, and then perhaps place that money, whatever portion is yours, with an advisor to invest it. And you could take as little or as much risk as you want, but it would be truly passive. And it sounds like that may take a load off of you just emotionally by doing that. Would you agree?
Yes, I think it would.
Yeah.
As far as investing, do you have any answers to what would be the best way to go?
Well, I think, you know, you would have to develop a plan with an advisor that considers your age, your goals, your risk tolerance, all of those things. But I think probably just a properly diversified stock and bond portfolio, maybe with a small allocation to gold, that's managed on your behalf where you have full visibility into what's happening. But, you know, somebody else is making those decisions. I think would be the way to go. So I'd head to our website if you don't have an advisor and connect with a certified Kingdom advisor at faithfi.com. Just click find a professional. That's faithfi.com. But it sounds like to me, just based on hearing you talk through it, that would give you some peace of mind and it would give you some additional assets that you don't have to think about, but in terms of the management of the property, but could be growing for the future. Thanks for your call today. Quickly to Huntington, Indiana. Hi, Jim. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well, thank you. How can I serve you?
I'm asking your opinion on paying on a mortgage half on the first and half on the 15th to save over the length of the time of the mortgage.
Yeah, are you talking about a biweekly where you would do every 2 weeks, so 26
yes,
payments, half payments a year, or are you just talking
yes,
about
right.
the same 12 payments just split into 20, you know, into 24? Do you see what? Do you understand the difference? Because if you do the biweekly,
yeah, well,
you're doing it every 2 weeks. If you do it on the first and the 15th, you're not doing the biweekly because you end up with the same number of payments over a year.
Well, but if you pay on the first and of the, if your payment comes up on the first and you've already paid the previous payment and you pay half then on the first and pay half on the 15th, over a 30-year loan, you take off 5 to 7 years.
Yeah, and typically the way that works is, I mean, unless they're going to apply that intra-month, my experience is the way you knock off the 5 to 6 years is you pay every 2 weeks, which is a total of, there's 26 two-week periods in a year. That's 13 payments. So by paying every 2 weeks, you end up paying a full extra payment a year. And doing that over a 30-year mortgage is going to knock the 5 or 6 years off. Not paying on the first and the 15th and ending up paying only the same 12. So I think if you're going to do this to get that savings, you need to go every 2 weeks. Thanks for your call. We'll be right back. I'm thankful you've joined us today on Faith and Finance Live here on Moody Radio. I'm Rob West. In this segment of the broadcast, we dive into our mailbag. That's right. You send us questions. We give you answers every Wednesday. By the way, if you want to send us a question, do that at moodyradio.org/finance. Now, to help me tackle these questions is my producer, Amy Rios. And Amy, I got a question for you. Did you do a March Madness bracket this year?
Oh, Rob, don't you know that I don't really get into sports?
I mean, do, but I was hoping Marty talked you into it this year. And
no, actually, I didn't do it this year. I did it a few years ago with some friends here at work. But, you know, I didn't do all that great, so I wasn't encouraged to do it again.
We have a family bracket, and I'm winning. Not that I'm going to, you know, gloat or anything.
Well, hey, you know. No gloating here, you know.
No, that's true. All right, Amy, what you got for us today?
Well, the first one is from Ronnie, and he writes, any thoughts on who should get a life insurance policy or who should not get one?
Ah, yeah, it's a good question, Ronnie. You know, you only need life insurance if you have dependents, really, who rely on your income. Late in life, you might want to take out what's known as a burial policy. Some folks feel better knowing they have that. But I would say it's better to have that money saved, and because that way, once you've accumulated enough in a designated savings account and you've done the pre-planning on the burial, then from that point forward, you're saving that premium. I generally recommend that you don't consider life insurance as an inheritance for your grown children or heirs. I'd recoup that into your monthly plan. But again, the primary opportunity here is to offset a risk that exists if you, as a breadwinner during your working years, were to pass away and therefore create a hardship for your dependents or spouse. That's where life insurance comes in. We generally recommend term insurance because it allows you to get the full amount that you need, 10 to 12 times your income at a minimum, and only for the period of time that you need it during your working years. There are reasons why you'd want to get a whole life policy. I would say they're few and far between, but for instance, if you've maxed out other qualified plans, you don't have any, you're trying to catch up on retirement, maybe you have a lifelong dependent, a buy-sell agreement on a business, things like that.
Okay, thank you, Rob.
Sure.
Next up, Stanley writes, I have $90,000 that I'd like to put into a savings account online, but I want to make sure that I get one that is secure. How do I go about doing that? I realize there are a lot of online banks, but I'm just nervous because this is such a large amount of money.
Yeah. Well, I would say that it's a lot to keep in a savings account unless you intend to use it for something in the not too distant future. You know, we generally recommend having 3 to 6 months living expenses for your emergency fund and liquid savings. And then obviously if you have a targeted expense or savings goal in the next 3 years, you could add that to it. Now, to select an online bank, I'd go to bankrate.com. They're going to provide all the rankings with a 5-star system, tell you who has the best rates. You're going to want to make sure they're FDIC insured. They just about all will be. And that's really the key, Stanley, in terms of safety. I realize, you know, doing business online, you may be concerned about that. I don't think you need to be. The federal government's going to step in if that institution were to fail and make sure your money is protected and you have access to it. There really are no more, brick and mortar banks are no more safe than online banks.
Okay, very good to keep in mind. Finally today, Colleen writes, we have approximately $500,000 scattered in various accounts, including I-bonds. Should we pay off our HELOC account using the I-bond account? We're paying 8% interest on the remaining $19,000 balance on the HELOC right now.
Yeah, I think it would be a good idea to cash out the I-bonds. Now, you have to have held them for a year before you cash them out. I suspect you have. And if it's less than 5 years, you're going to pay a small penalty equal to 3 months of interest, the prior 3 months, the most recent 3 months. But we're about to get a rate reduction here, I expect. May the 1st, we'll get the new fixed rate for the I-bonds. And, we're expecting that just given that inflation's been coming down, even though it's not where we want it to be, that the I-bond rates will continue to decline. So I think given that you're currently at 5.27, it's coming down likely, and you're paying 8, makes a lot of sense to go ahead and knock that out.
Sounds like a real wise strategy. So thank you all for writing us. We'd love to hear from anybody else that has an email question. Just go to moodyradio.org/finance, and you'll find a form there to send Rob a question.
Okay, great. Yeah, send those along. We always love to receive them, and we'll get to them when we can. Amy, thank you.
Thank you, Rob.
All right. Let's go back to the phones to Idaho. Hi, Barbara. Thanks for your patience. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you. I was wondering, I am getting Social Security disability, and I'm 65, and I was wondering, do I ever change that into regular Social Security, or is it always disability?
No, it will change on its own. You don't have to do anything. The Social Security Administration will automatically switch SSDI to SSI benefits. That's the regular benefits when you reach full retirement age. So whether you have the SSI or the SSDI, it automatically becomes the regular. You need to pay attention, though, to make sure that happens. Sometimes these things don't happen as automatically as they're supposed to. So if you don't see a change, contact your Social Security office to let them know that you've reached full retirement age. But in theory, it should happen automatically.
Oh, okay. And full retirement age is 67?
Yeah, it depends upon your birth year. When were you born?
59.
Okay. If you were born in 59, let me just look that up real quick here for you. It's going to be 66 and 10 months. So not quite age 70, almost, though.
Okay.
All right.
All right, great. Thank you.
Thank you. You're welcome, Barbara. Let's go to Spokane. Hi, Kathy. Go ahead.
Hi. My husband and I have not inherited. We have, I can't think of the name. I just lost my train of thought.
Well, I see in my notes here a trust, maybe?
It's in a trust, right. Thank you.
Okay.
My husband and I have acquired a condo. It's in a trust. We've had it for 4 years. His mom died, and that's how we acquired it. We now have it up for sale and wondering what is the best thing to do. We want to buy another house closer to us because the condo is currently in Florida, and then just rent it out for some cash flow.
Okay. So if I understand correctly, you're looking to sell the condo, and then you're going to buy another piece of real estate. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay.
So that we can rent it out.
Yeah. All right. Very good. How long ago did you receive this as an inheritance?
4 years ago.
Oh, okay. So it's appreciated
it's still in
since
the trust.
Right. But the value has gone up since the date of death, I would imagine.
Yes, about $75,000 to $100,000.
Okay. So you can do what's called a 1031 exchange, which just simply means that you can take a property that you're selling that would have been subject to capital gains, which this would be. So when you inherited that, the cost basis was stepped up to the value, the market value of the property as of the date of death. And then you're going to pay capital gains on the increase from in the value of the property from the date of death to the time you sell it. And so if you say that's $75,000, depending on your income, you know, for 2024 capital gains tax brackets, are you married filing jointly?
Yes.
Okay. So if you were to sell it.
Social Security, both of us.
So. Okay. So if you were to sell it this year, do you make less than $94,000?
Yes.
Okay. So you probably aren't going to have any capital gains. I mean, I'd check with your CPA just to make sure there's nothing that I'm missing in your situation. But the capital gains rates go, you know, up to $94,000 in taxable income if you're married filing jointly. Not the gain on the property sale. We're talking taxable income. If you're below $94,050 for the tax year 2024, your capital gain rate is zero. So what that means is you'd be able to sell that property, not pay any capital gains, take all the proceeds and do whatever you want with it, whether you stick it in a savings account, put it in stocks and bonds, or buy another piece of real estate. There's not any tax implications there.
Oh, that's music to my ears. Yeah.
Okay, good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that helped a lot because we were looking into a 1031 exchange because that's what we were told, but this puts a little bit of a different light on it. So.
Yeah. And so again, I think anytime you have something new like this going on, never a bad idea to check with your CPA. I'd probably just call and confirm that based on your specific situation. If you don't have one, you could connect with a certified Kingdom advisor there in Spokane and get a referral. But it sounds like you're in good shape here, Kathy. All the best to you guys. Thanks for calling today. Quickly to Kalamazoo, Michigan. Adam, I know you're driving. You've been waiting patiently. You've got just about a minute or so left. How can I help?
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out a resource that I can get to invest small amounts of money, one that's preferably in line with my Christian point of views, because I don't have a large sum of money to open up basically what you'd call an investment account.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, if you wanted to just invest in the broad market, I would say probably a robo-advisor is the solution, like Betterment or Wealthfront or the Schwab Intelligent Portfolios. But that's going to get you into the broad market indexes, and you're going to own all kinds of, you know, major companies and mid-size and small-size companies here in the U.S. and internationally, and they may or may not align with your values. So if you really want to be aligned with your values and you have a conviction about that, you're probably going to want to look at the faith-based investing mutual funds like Eventide or One Ascent or Crossmark or Guidestone. All of those are listed on our website. If you go to faithfi.com, click on the show. You're going to want to look, though, at the expense ratios and figure out which class of mutual fund is the right fit for you in terms of the expenses and the minimum investment. But once you pick one, you could set it up as an automatic contribution and just reinvest a little at a time every month. Thanks for your call today, Adam. Faith and Finance Live is a partnership between Moody Radio and Faith Five. Thank you to Jim, Anthony, Dan, and Amy. See you tomorrow. Bye-bye.